This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
So for my banter item, I wanted to go back to what I hope is a running theme on this podcast, and we can just bring it back every week in one way or another. And I saw an article in NPR on Uyghurs. And in particular, it was saying that, you know, last week we were talking about problems Uyghurs have in China and how the Chinese will kind of kick them for no particular reason with things like making them keep their restaurants open during Ramadan and that sort of business. But this article was saying that Uyghurs have actually been very successful as models and actors in China because they look white. And there's demand in China for models and actors who look white. I mean, obviously, there's a demand in that if you're you have characters who are supposed to be European or white Americans, it helps to have people who look white. And, you know, you can do this more easily if they're Chinese people and speak Mandarin. So you don't need the interpreter on the set, and you don't need to recruit them and get a special visa or something like that. And then also it was saying that there's just, you know, Western-oriented beauty standards within China, and that, you know, there's a certain admiration for people with double-fold eyelids and that sort of thing. So I just thought this was really interesting, and, you know, it was kind of a good hook for – we can talk a little bit about that, but I also thought it was a good hook for just kind of the broad history of the Uyghur people, who I feel like a total hipster here because I've been into Uyghurs since they used to be called Tocharians. You know, I read when I was in college, I read this book called Mummies of Urumqi that was about some extraordinarily well-preserved mummies from, you know, basically they were the ancestors of Uyghurs. And it was saying, and, you know, you dig up these ancient mummies, and they had red hair, and their art indicates that they had blue eyes, and, you know, they generally had European-type features. And a little bit later, there's writing from this region that's in an Indo-European language. Although around the year 1000, they went from an Indo-European language to... Oh, also they had plaid textiles, which is kind of interesting. Hmm. And that, you know, you obviously have plaid textiles in Europe, including in like ancient Europe. There's some plaid that's been preserved in an Austrian salt mine that dates back to like the Roman era. Anyway, so it's kind of so.
I don't think I was reading that stuff in college.
it's a very Gabriel thing.
I saw an article about it in the New York Times. It was like a photo spread, and it had it was kind of reviewing the book, and then I went and got the book. It was really interesting. And it was also so around 1000, they went from speaking an Indo-European language to speaking a Turkic language and converting from Buddhism to Islam. But anyway, I just thought it was really interesting, and then what it says about, you know, race and how race was socially constructed, and do we understand these people who, you know, are in Asia geographically and went from speaking an Indo-European language to a Turkic language, and now they speak Mandarin. And in some sense, you know, phenotypically they look white, but they were, but culturally they're Central Asian Muslims, and they're a pretty good fit for the pots not people model, right? The idea that you don't necessarily have migrations, but you do have people adopting the cultures of their neighbors. In this case, they're adopting essentially Mongol culture with a Turkic language and that sort of thing. And then, you know, so you have these transitions for the same people. They've been there for thousands and thousands of years, but their culture has changed dramatically over those periods.
It's interesting because what you have, you seem to be describing an ethnic group without sort of an underlying constant. Like, so what makes Uyghurs Uyghurs if it's not sort of through history, if it's not language and if it's not religion?
Well, Uyghur is a modern term, right? Okay. So, I mean, the language that archaeologists have for them in the ancient period is Tocharian, which is, I'm not sure where they got that term from, but we do have some preserved writing from them. So it looks like these people have lived there ever since the Indo-Europeans spread out from, you know, the South Caucasus. But
how do they know it's the same people?
Well, first of all, the mummies look just like the people who live there now. And
they must look horrible.
Well, the mummies are really well preserved. but there's some preserved art that looks just like the people who live there now. And I think they've done genetic testing.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Well, I just think it's interesting that, you know, in the one moment you can, you know, denigrate people and give them second class status, while at the next moment you're like, you know what? We really want you to be in our movies, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And right? I mean, it sounds familiar.
Are they like the bad guys in the movies, or are they, you know, the romantic leads? Like, what are the Uyghurs?
Well,
like,
that's interesting, right? So first of all, it seems like from the article, so I've read a total of 600 words on this, right? But it sounds like they're appearing as fashion models, especially because some of them don't look, they look kind of halfway between Asian and European, right? They have some East Asian ancestry and some Indo-European ancestry. And so that kind of plays into this beauty standard that you see in some parts of Asia that also occurs with things like cosmetic surgery to get a double-fold eyelid, of the aspiration to adopt certain aspects of a white appearance. So that would seem to be kind of an aspirational thing. When they appear as actors, my understanding is that they're not playing Uyghur characters, they're playing white American or white European characters. Mm. And I don't know whether white American or white European characters are good guys or bad guys in Chinese movies. I'd imagine a fair number of the time they're bad guys. Oh, and then also one other thing is interesting is it's quoting a Uyghur model, and she says that when she visits Europe, people refuse to believe that she's Chinese, and they think that her passport is forged.
I would have actually thought they were playing the romantic leads or the good guys, and sort of, you know, with the globalization of media and just the sort of sense that whiteness is linked to beauty and, you know.
International love story.
Hierarchical understandings of race and racial difference, right?
Yeah.
That are above beyond national boundaries.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like the trend right now, does it?
No.
No.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.